Rich and Ken with Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are living in the greatest plot twist in American sports history. The Red Sox are, dare I say, not only a good team, but now officially a wild card team. What kind of simulation have we stepped into? It is 93.7 WEEI, Rich Shurtleff, Ken Laird, and our own three-time Super Bowl champion, Mr. Teddy J. And you can give us a call at 617-779-7937. You can also listen to us on the Odyssey app. You press that little microphone button and leave us a take grenade. We play those later on in the show. Ken, I see that you are still covered in peanut butter. You have been obviously running up and down Liam in Birmingham.
I'm scared to do this because you've jinxed them how many times this year, Ted? Three times has Rich jinxed the team, and he put up the trophy of the World Series trophies on the text chain, and I'm not thrilled about that. Don't love that.
Oh, yes. If the Red Sox, if this year's Red Sox don't win the World Series, that's something I'll happily take the blame for. Yes, it will all be my fault that this team that was absolutely toilet surfing, you know, a couple of weeks ago. I mean, this is what a weird-ass place that we are in. I honestly... And what a way to come back. And if you want to talk about it, obviously we'll take your call, 617-779-7937. But let's go ahead and get into some sports, shall we there, Stiz?
What just happened?
Sports happened.
Yes, and Sports Happened is brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens, 617-777-7777, and words I never thought I'd be saying 3 weeks ago. Your Boston Red Sox are now a wild card team. Stiz, hit the clip.
But when you play with him, you have that kind of newfound respect for what he brings.
The one swinging a high fly ball towards the monster. It's up, it's deep. Narvaez bat flips, it's gone, and Anna lands down.
And that bomb that landed on 90 is the Nissan play of the game. You deserve a car that thrills you, and Nissan's got an exciting full line that'll put goosebumps on your goosebumps. Experience the thrill for yourself and shop your local Nissan store at NissanUSA.com today. The Red Sox just started the second half of the season by kicking the ass of the best team in the American League. 10-0, and now 10 in a row. And how's this for a stat, guys? This is the first 10-game stretch in Red Sox history where they went 10-0, scored 50-plus runs, and allowed fewer than 15 runs. And even cooler, they did it with their best hitter serving a suspension, but he'll be back tonight. 5-0 without Wilson Contreras.
Who needs him?
Yeah, well, right. He's like Jaylen Brown. They don't need him. But it is amazing that this team that just couldn't get on. I mean, they couldn't score. Three hits for Yoshida, three hits for Narvaez, three hits for Caleb Durbin, and three hits for the Rays. So like, each one of those guys had as many hits as the Rays did. And every time I see Durbin or Narvaez have a great game, what do you guys think every time?
Oh, Lorenzo. I mean, right out of the chute.
That's it, man. Hey, this is I was worried about where they'd be, you know, mentally coming out of the All-Star break. I mean, you win nine games.
They party too much?
A little bit, you know. I mean, I know some of the fellas were out on the Nantucket with you, Rich, hanging out.
Don't spread that rumor.
You just wondered, you know, because in recent history they've come out of these All-Star breaks not really focused and playing well. So to see them get off to an early lead in the second inning like they did, the sacrifice bunts, the stealing of the bases. They just picked up where they left off, which is great to see, man.
And no offense, Rich, to the Nissan play of the game, but we have better boardgasms, including back-to-back bunts. Mm-hmm. I think that set Cooper off, which is exciting. And Lenny DiNardo had a great point on the broadcast. This is like the Spider-Man meme of two teams pointing at each other. Your Red Sox are becoming more Rays-like than the Rays here. They are embracing their small ball mentality, and they're doing a great job of it.
You know what? It's true. And you know what? Just because I can't get enough of when Cooper Boardman ends up losing it behind the board, I think that Stiz has compiled a nice little compilation of some boardgasms that we got today. Yep. Stiz, let that son of a bitch roll, all right?
He swings and he bloops it towards right center. It is down base hit. Yoshida around third. He will score. Down the right field line, hooking towards pesky pole. It is around the pole and out of here. He swings and he chops it right side. Off the glove of the second baseman into right field. Durbin home. Yoshida around third. He scores. and a bunt from Chang, third base side, up the line, rolling, up the line, it curves, fair, picked up there by Fortes, and the run scores! Rafaela into second with a trademark at bat. It's up, it's deep, Narvaez, bat flips, it's gone, and Anna lands down.
Yeah.
Can we confirm where his eyes were rolled up in the back of his and his toes curled up?
Stay on vacation, Will.
Smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, right.
You know, DiNardo's getting a pregnancy test. I don't blame him. This was a cool game. This was one of those where everything just seemed to work. And as I was saying before, I mean, you were at the lowest depths of the toilet, and now the Sox have a chance to be 500 by the end of the day, and they are now a wild card team. And you know what? And I know that you always joke about how I've been giving Chad Tracy, you think, maybe a little too much credit. But I mean, how about this? I saw Tom Caron put this out there. So the Tracy turnaround, obviously, 10-game winning streak. They have been a major league best 18-5 since June 19th. They have outscored opponents by 44 runs during this win streak. They've had 10 shutouts, which is tied for the second most in major league baseball. I mean,
okay, but. Shutouts, that's their 10th shutout. Who was on the mound today? And who's the GM responsible for swinging the trade to get him in here in the offseason?
Sure.
It's your guy, Bresbaut. I mean, this Jake Bennett, it might be his best acquisition. And no offense to Lorenzo and Caleb Durbin. I mean, what he has been doing is unbelievable. Like, he was so efficient today. 6 innings, 2 hits, no earned, 3 strikeouts. I mean, he's just smooth, just throws it. I mean, contact hitter, but he's 5-3. He's got a 2.35 ERA. And right when they needed him with Crochet out, he found a guy to replace him.
Mm-hmm. And Ted, do you remember when they were at the lowest of the low? The pitching was still good.
Oh, yeah.
And we were saying that all they had to do, there was some statistic that if they just hit at the average, if they just had the average amount of runs as the rest of MLB, then they would have been one of the best teams in baseball.
Yeah.
And now they're outscoring opponents by 44 runs during this streak.
Yeah, I didn't believe that, Rich. I didn't believe that stat, but now I do. And now I see what they meant. I mean, obviously, just a little bump in production at the plate, you see, you know, that it equates to wins. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and they got legit, like, I mean, you basically, if you got three kind of horses for, you know, pitching in the playoffs, you can win some series. I mean, they got legit 4 or 5, you know, high quality pitchers, and that's not even, you know, maybe if Crochet comes back. But the hitting is huge, Rich. To your point, when they were at their lowest of their low, they were averaging less than 4 runs a game, which the average is about 4.5. So they weren't even coming close. And now, I mean, they're almost, you know, averaging, you know, almost 6 runs a game in this in the last 15 games. So obviously the bats have turned around. What I like is that it feels as if they're not middling it as far as. This team was designed to be like the Milwaukee Brewers, like the Tampa Bay Rays, a small, you know, kind of a small ball, athletic, you know, move the guys around the bases kind of a baseball team. But they weren't playing like it. Finally, they are. They're acting like they're a small ball team, and you can see they're, you know, they're executing like bunts for the couldn't even execute just simple bunts
early in the
season.
Nor would they try. No, they would swing it at the first pitch. I mean, swinging away. Just
that's a good
roll
point.
Over 4-3, no walks, nothing.
Eight strikeouts today, and they were, you know, how many games have they had 10 more strikeouts? So they're putting the ball in play, which is just, it's amazing how when you just put the ball in play and you don't strike out, how many games you can win.
And you know what else I like?
Oh. I'm sorry, Ken. The one thing I like, too, is that they're not frauds. And what I mean by that is that they're beating good teams. This is not racking up wins or finding a way out of the hole by beating up on awful teams. They swept the Yankees. The White Sox were one of the hottest teams in baseball when they swept them. And they come out of this break when they had every excuse to be smelling their own farts and absolutely murdered the best team in the American League. I like the fact that it doesn't matter who you put in front of them. They don't care. They look impressive.
Yeah, at home today, which is like, what? You're winning at home?
That's a
good
point.
Can you imagine if they sweep? No, I don't want to jinx them. Sweep this
series.
Oh,
you can. Rich is jinxing them.
I'm the one who's, jinxing
them. Well, okay.
Them, yes.
But Rich, if they sweep this series, they're 6 games out of first place. So you have the first place raise here
crazy.
Right now. You're 9 back. So
it's insane. I never thought we'd be here. Let's go to Paul on line 1. Paul, what's up, buddy? How's it going?
Hey, Paul.
Hey, it's going good, and you guys hit the nail on the head. In terms of zero probability and least likely to happen, from the ultimate dumpster fire. This is like the Titanic and the Bermuda Triangle rising up from the ashes and beating up on Chicago at home, unheard of. Now they're suddenly like the two-time world champions, which, just for the record, their run differential is at a record pace. So we're suddenly, like you said, for the last month, the best damn team in baseball. And here's the clear, simple point. You have two things, the obvious and the inevitable. The obvious is when you crap out all year offensively and you find a way and know you can make contact, guess what? Hit on hit on hit, it works. And then a little home run, now it's 4-0. And then the obvious is our pitching staff. What, 5 innings, 51 pitches? The other last 2 weeks ago, 7 runs, no hits. These are Cy Young type of performances. And the dummy Breslow got some hell of a pitching. We get the bats in the right approach, small ball. Who knows what we can do? Because we're doing awesome. You can't get any better than this.
Yep,
I agree, Paul. And you know what's wild is that you're going to have to start having a conversation about these players outside of pitching, about the offense, and think to yourself, were they underperforming under Alex Cora for a reason? I know that's a tough question to face.
Somewhere
but
Adam
Jones
is putting his hands together. Yes, Rich. Embrace the hate.
Because can't you – isn't that like a – it's fair to ask that now. Were they underperforming under Alex Cora for a reason? Because
or the driveline guy who,
there you
who
go.
Suddenly quit. I mean,
that's a good point. I mean, it wasn't just Alex Cora that was let go. It was, you know, the driveline guy. So that's a whole philosophy.
Although there are some driveline guys here.
We don't know how many.
But, yeah,
I mean,
there's less.
There's less. So you don't really know. But you know, that's the point is, it's not just Alex Cora. It's also some of the driveline guys. I mean, 6 coaches. Went out long without Cora.
Yeah. And do you want to read Jackson's intel from Lorenzo? We have a live Lorenzo tweet. Lorenzo, who is from Gradom G-Swing.
Lorenzo, if you don't remember, is the guy that Caleb Durbin went to, Narvaez had been going to. And remember when Durbin was about as bad as it could get? It was somewhat of a coup and a big story that Durbin had gone outside of the organization to get batting help. And it almost was like, immediately after he started seeing him, Durbin has become one of the better hitters in baseball. And Narvaez, obviously, today, you know, showed that the guy can still swing it. So what did Lorenzo was above him. So what does Lorenzo got to say?
Lorenzo just texted Jackson that he flew in yesterday to work with Narvi.
I love it.
So he wants to take credit for 3-for-4 today.
Dude,
take it.
Tweet it out.
He's not afraid to take the credit now.
No.
He should. He should be spiking the football. You know what? If he gets business out of this, then great. Because it's truly... I mean, the Caleb Durbin story is amazing because it is an absolute line you can draw between him getting help from this guy, from Lorenzo, and all of a sudden him becoming the hitter that we thought we were getting when they brought him here.
Yeah.
I'm curious. What do you guys think? I mean, is it sustainable that the Anthony Siegler, the T.C. Changs, the Andrew, you know, Monasterios, are these types of players that they will continue to play at this high level? Do we trust that you know the guys that have been brought up from 3A that they'll still be, you know, playing like this later in the season?
I mean, I guess the good news is Contreras comes back. You get an all-star first baseman back tonight. Romy probably goes to DH, or second, and then you move Siegler over to he could flip your shortstop a little bit. So you'll get some help back tonight. I don't really long-term trust Cheng, but I don't think you're going to need him. You know,
do we worry about? When is Marcelo Meyer coming back?
Right,
you know, Roman Anthony coming back? And how do you implement those guys when they come back?
Right. I mean, I think you got to think bigger as far as trade deadline and get a proven bat in here. That's what they need now. If you're going to make changes to this lineup, it better be for somebody that you can trust.
Let me ask you this, Ken, Rich. Does the trade deadline decision seem like a simple one? Like, it's not like do they have multiple holes and they just... I mean,
especially if you win
the
series. I mean, if you win 3 out of 4 against the Rays now you've got to be beyond a shadow of a doubt your buyers, right?
But doesn't it feel like it's simple what they got to do? Is just get a big right-handed bat, and that's it?
You know what? I also think that this series is the difference between a half measure and being bullish. I think that if they were to lose the next 3 games, you still got to invest in this team. I mean, this is the best team in the American League that the Red Sox are playing. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden they're bad again. It just means that, you know, you lost to a good team. At least you got 1 game out of it. You still should invest in this team. But if you sweep this team or win 3 out of 4, you got to be bullish. Like, you are in the playoffs. Now you're officially in the playoffs. It's time to start making a push.
And by the way, on the Nesson telecast, Dave O'Brien and Lou Maloney reported that the owners were there to greet the team coming back from the first half at the airport. Linda and John were there shaking hands, like Mike Vrabel coming down the jetway.
Wow. You got to hear this. I got listen to this clip. I heard this, and I was like, oh, all right. Let's go. Let it roll.
Oh, Stiz has the final.
Oh, Stiz got
While he does that, can I shock you with another stat? Statgasm. This is from This is from the official Red Sox notes post game. The Red Sox have allowed 14 runs in their last 10 games. It's the fewest ever in a 10-game span for the Red Sox in the live ball era. They have never had pitching this good in a 10-game span.
It's incredible.
Never.
I mean, just the it was gone from negative, you know, historical stats to like positive historical stats.
Right, what has happened?
Like in the last month?
Oh man!
And think of some of the pitching, the years where you had Lester and Buchholz.
Right.
You had some unbelievable pitchers come through here, and the fact that that is historic, that they're pitching at a historic rate.
Mm-hmm. Including Rivera, who's going tonight, who, you know, nobody's ever heard of, but he went like three innings on a Saturday last week and was three shutout innings. Mm-hmm. So he'll have to go tonight. So tonight's a bit of a long shot, but it is Friday night at Fenway. There we go. Get out the greens. Tarps off, baby. Let's start it up. Ever. Scottish Tartan Army, get back.
I know. I'm jealous of people going tonight. All right, I want to hear that, because I heard this clip, and it just kind of made me groan a little bit. Let's let it roll.
And John and Linda Henry and Craig Breslow greeted the team when they came off the bus on Sunday after the road trip sweep. That was nice.
Came back to Fenway. Three of them waiting at the entrance.
Mm-hmm. That feel a little shoehorned in there?
It was in the first inning, so I think they didn't shoehorn it in. That was breaking news right there off the top.
Hey, man, they're invested. They just want everyone to know that they're invested, man.
Yeah. Are they invested? Yeah. Will they make a big trade?
No.
Are they calling teams?
They have to now. Are you kidding me? They have to. They have our attention, right, Rich? I mean, they got us. They got us hanging on, and just, are you kidding me? Like, you have to do something.
But they didn't last year. I mean, right? They got Dustin May. They did not go for a big. You wanted Joe Ryan. They didn't get you Joe Ryan.
Yep.
Instead, you had to lose 2 out of 3 to the Yankees because you had no offense, but you didn't get Joe Ryan to help out either in game two. That would have been nice.
Yeah, but I don't remember at the time last year at this time feeling like there was they had to. You know, I feel like it felt like they had all the pieces already here that they just needed some guys to get healthy and they would have been okay. I don't remember. I feel like there's more pressure on this year's deadline to get somebody.
There's more pressure on Breslow for sure because he's close to. I mean, Rosenthal said he was going to get fired.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't forget, I mean, it was just, was it early in June 4th, I think? There were 14 games, no, excuse me, 8 games under 500. And the report came out that the owner was getting involved. I mean, it was around the owner's meetings. So it's, you know, keep that in mind. But to get a big bat and that they'd be willing to take on, some salary to get that big bat. So that was when they were 8 games under 500. Now, they have to be just as motivated, obviously, even more, considering where they're at right now.
Well, give us credit. We broke that story, baby.
Right.
Buster came on our show.
Yeah, you're right.
It wasn't our information, but, you know, we were the venue in which it was delivered. So I'll take credit, of course. But speaking of trades and the trade deadline, Jeff Passan, who obviously is very connected, he had a report out today, and he kind of went over what he is hearing about each of the teams that most likely would be in a position to make some sort of move. And he wrote about the Red Sox. He said, for now, their plans are fluid. Boston isn't discounting pursuing help before August 3rd. The Red Sox also know that for an entire half of the season, they personified mediocrity, and that 15 games does not a season make. So, like many others, they're weighing their options, knowing that if they stumble, they can, here's the word, pivot into dump mode and make a killing with Chapman, as well as potentially Gray, Wilson Contreras, and Garrett Whitlock. A nightmare that would be if they just started like loading off guys. I mean, obviously, if they would have to go like completely like the opposite of what you've had in the last 3 weeks. It would have to be a nosedive for you to justify getting rid of those four.
Okay, now, do you believe that's like a passing report, or is he just kind of speculating and stating the obvious that, hey, a lot can happen here in the next 17 games?
I think it's the latter.
Because I don't think they would be, you know, reaching out to him. Anybody would be talking like, hey, we still want to sell. You know, where's he getting that? Where is he possibly getting that from? I'd be shocked.
And I considering how bad the American League is right now and how tight the race is, I just can't imagine anybody feeling that confident that they're clearly out of the playoff race, you know, by selling. So I would be shocked if that was the direction they went, Rich.
Okay, so that's Chad Tracy. And Ted and Ken, I was thinking about this while he was talking. And obviously, it's been, we gave you the numbers on how things have been since he's taken over. Sometimes you can have a great manager or a great coach and their time just is up. And I know that it wasn't just Cora that was let go from this team. It was all the driveline guys. It was the batting coaches and things like that. I'm sorry. It was It was one driveline guy. Just the one guy.
The main guy, though.
The main guy. But there's been more than just that aspect of this team that has gotten better and that was underperforming when Cora was here. If you remember, if you can think back to that awful beginning of the season, the team consistently looked flat. Like, they often came out sluggish. They made a lot of mental mistakes.
Oh, uninspired, and they'd get in deep holes early in games.
Yep, they didn't seem prepared, which was odd.
No,
also, and Ken, your memory is insane, but I seem to remember there being some pretty questionable bullpen management during some of those Cora games. Do you remember the same? I want to go back, but I was writing all this down while I was listening to Chad Tracy and racking my brain. I seem to remember there being a couple moments where I was like, all right, well, I don't know why he did that. The other part of it is that this team has gotten better without the injured players coming back and making a difference. The injured players are still injured.
Well, that's what 774 texture, to your point. Cora had four auto outs that he had to play. Meyer, Anthony, Story, and Duran, who's still in. But Tracy only has one, like, until today.
Yeah.
Like, maybe Cora was just, like, handcuffed by these guys.
That's a fair point. I mean, these guys, if these guys don't get injured, these guys from AAA don't come up, and maybe they're not where they are right now. So, part of me, it wants to give a pass to Cora because.
And especially, like, their problems were obviously they don't weren't scoring runs. I mean, the pitching's been pretty good all year. Even the bullpen, I mean, Chapman's been lights out, so. It wasn't like they were blowing leads late. They just weren't scoring. And, like, you know, I guess he was if you want to blame Cora, he was probably too defensive of his hitting coach, and that got him in trouble.
Maybe so. And the only – I'm trying to think, like, okay, well, so what is Chad Tracy doing that's just so different? What's his secret sauce? Is he inspiring guys? Is he, you know, like, to play above their ability? And it's like, I feel like he's just kind of like – he's just – positively kind of neutral.
Yeah, he's just there.
He knows the game. But where Cora, maybe there's some bitterness or jadedness.
A little drama,
passive aggressiveness in how he kind of, you know, views his team. And on a day-to-day basis, you know, the message maybe just gets kind of, okay, Cora, we got it. You're not happy. Or, you're trying to send a message without saying it directly. Where Chad Tracy is just, he has no ulterior motives. He's just coaching baseball, and maybe that's the difference.
It reminds me of the last days of Bruce Cassidy, because in a way that both of them would find subtle ways of calling out players and saying things that were, you know, in one way or another was a message, like a shot fired towards one of their guys. Now,
and it just wears you down, Rich.
Yeah.
Yep. Wouldn't you agree, Cassidy was, the players got him fired. Bergeron probably got him fired. You know, like they had enough of his. They asked, in my opinion, I think they asked to get him out of here.
In this case, it was not
the players. It was Breslow wanted him out.
I agree. And I don't think it was that extreme, but I think both of them similarly would call out players near the end. And I don't think I think there might have been a little bit of a feeling of fear in the locker room, especially when younger guys. Exactly. And if there's anything we know, it's that Chad Tracy connects with these young players.
Yep.
And so it might not even be that, you know, he's some sort of great manager, but he's not a guy that's got them on edge, and he seems to be a fairly decent, almost like a calming presence with these guys, and maybe that's what they need. And I know that we talked to Chad at the beginning, and his whole thing was that he thought, as far as the hitting was concerned, there were too many voices in their heads, and everything that's happened since has seemed to clear the decks of that.
Except
and now
Lorenzo.
All these guys
they want Lorenzo's voice.
Except Lorenzo, of course. But as I said, this isn't killing Cora, but I do think that sometimes you need the right manager for a certain team.
Right.
Like Cora is going to be a great manager for another team, but for this particular roster, maybe, just maybe, a guy who has a little bit better an idea how to communicate with younger players that may or may not be a little more sensitive and not want to be called out. He, God knows, he protects his guys. You know, we've talked to him about certain players, and he has gone to bat for him even when they were playing poorly. So I
So, so when they trade for Yordan Alvarez, you hire Cora back to handle him.
Don't tease me, man. That would be
they
insane.
Make that happen. Yes.
Please. Are you kidding me? Oh, my God.
All right, let's go to Steve on line two. Steve, what's up,
Steve,
buddy?
Steve claims he never quit believing, right, Steve?
What do you mean claims? I'm the only one on the radio. I said they need 10 of 13. Now 10 of 13 is pedestrian. now go back to the bad old days. Of course you knew they had a good staff, and you knew the American League was garbage, but you had the whole story. Oh, they get too many people to climb over. They never can get 10 out of 13. Well, now they're like 14 or 15 and 2, mm-hmm. some absurd stat in the last 25, and you still got a segment of the population. Well, they're only making up for, you know, their bad time. They're still not over 500. They're this, that, and the third, blah, blah, blah. So today I'm going and I'm listening about Bennett. He's had two starts before today against the Rays, but it was his first and his fourth start, and he gave up four runs each. But we know he's been pitching like he's got his ERA's 1.3 in the last four or five starts. Do you think the next team that faces Bennett is going to say, am I going to get the Bennett that was four runs against the Rays back in the beginning, or is it now? So the issue is, it's now what you're going to get going forward. Are you going to get the Caleb Durbin pre-Lorenzo, or are you going to get the Caleb Durbin going forward?
Steve, there is no more Caleb Durbin before Lorenzo. Lorenzo has now made his mark,
right,
and he has changed him. Like, his DNA has changed.
I'm just curious, what does he think? I was just going to ask, what does he think this team's capable of? Is he buying into this team or no?
You dropped them too soon then. Call back, Steve.
Yeah. So he's not believing what he's...
No, he was believing that. No, he claims he was the one that didn't quit on this team.
Oh, okay,
I think he believes. I mean, and Jake Bennett, by the way, again, back to Breslow, they gave up their number five prospect in the offseason to trade for this guy. He's 25. He was a former second-round pick. He's not a nobody. They gave up good stuff for him, so give Breslow a little credit for making that move in the offseason. He's huge for you.
Dude, you got to kind of give him a lot of credit. Considering
Rich doesn't like that, though. He wants to give it all to Tracy.
Yeah, that's our guy.
I get it. Tracy's our guy.
I mean, the two things that Breslow said this team is going to be built on, pitching and defense. Yep. And look at them. That's what they dominate in pitching and defense.
I just think that I'll tell you whether I'm going to give him the credit he deserves after this trade deadline.
Okay.
That's fair.
Because I think that this is a team that has earned them going out and doing something to help them win a championship.
Rich, there's a lot of pressure on him because the last two trade deadlines haven't been great.
Stinko.
And this
last year, Steven Matz and Dustin May. Two years ago, Lucas Sims and Luis Garcia and Danny Jansen.
And these are different negotiations than in the offseason. The pressure's on. It's just different. They're probably happening faster. Can he pull off a trade that's going to be significant enough to put this team over the hump?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the thing is, too, is that right before the game, Chad Tracy came out with, like, this big list because he said, I knew that you guys were going to ask about the injuries, so I'm going to run through all of them. And it kind of sounds similar to what Rob Bradford told us. It doesn't seem like there's any kind of change on Garrett Crochet. We're still waiting for him. Dude, I don't know if he's going to be back this season. Like, I mean, we haven't heard anything. The Roman Anthony thing, he says that he's feeling good, but there was no positive update on that. I think that's just a way of...
I think he's done too for the season.
Wow. So
Roman and Crochet are both done?
That's what it feels like.
Crochet, I agree.
Does feel like it.
I feel like Roman, dude, he's not even doing... What is it? Shadow swings or whatever they say?
Dry swings?
Dry swings?
He's miming. He's miming.
I mean, come on, dude.
You got to perfect that first.
I feel like he's checked out too, man.
He's down in Fort Myers. He's becoming a beast. He's like Rocky when he went to Siberia.
All right. But it'll be interesting how they kind of transition him back in if he does come back. It's all kind of fascinating because right now the train is rolling, and you know, any guys that you bring back, Marcelo, Roman, how does that affect the kind of continuity?
It is wild because all their offense came from hitters 5 through 9 today. Like Duran, who's in the heart of a controversy all of a sudden, he's back yelling at media members for being too fat.
Eight hits from hitters 5 through 9.
It inspired him. Duran,
yeah.
3 RBIs today. Bingo.
Crazy.
Yep,
start ripping
yep.
media members then. Keep doing it.
Sure.
Call me fat today.
Well, real quick, there's something to that. I think he needs to have an edge, I think, almost sometimes.
He's had a lot of edges that have not gone anywhere.
Maybe we should, you know what? Maybe we should have somebody who is essentially the character, like someone he can hate. We should just have like a if you hate Jaren Duran, 617-779-7937. We will let you just go crazy as long as it's not anything personal. We'll let you go crazy on him. We will make it a viral clip because it does seem like he needs somebody to piss him off to be a great player. Like, it's like all of a sudden after there's some sort of controversy, he goes off. So, yes, you know what? If you hate Jaren Duran, there you go. You give us a call. we will be the tool.
Days, but it actually is a good thing. It's for their benefit, right?
It's for their benefit, yes. And they will know that. And you know what? I'll say, Chad, listen to this maniac who called in. He's crazy. I wouldn't use this as locker room, bulletin board material if I were you. And there you go. And maybe he might do it. As long as there's nothing personal in there, we'll take that. All right. We are going to be back in 2 minutes. But Robert Kraft has finally spoken about Mike Vrabel and the whole Vrabel situation.
This is a kind of a shocker. This came out of nowhere.
Yeah, you think?
You think? In July 17th, he's at the end of
He was going to be asked about it the next time he spoke.
Yeah.
Yep. He was? I mean, when? I mean, owners don't talk a lot in this town. Mm-hmm. He didn't have to talk.
He talked.
The message he gave, you're not surprised by what he said, though, right?
I want to hear it.
Just when he said? Okay.
All right. So when we get back, for the first time, I believe, Robert Kraft has spoken up about what he thinks of the Mike Vrabel, Diana Rossini situation. We're not going anywhere. Back in two. It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich certainly, Ken Laird, Ted Johnson. And, of course, you can call us at 617-779-7937. Also, even though it's a abbreviated show because of the Red Sox game, you can still launch us a take grenade. Go to the Odyssey app, follow the show, press the little button, and the shows get zapped right to your phone. And also the microphone, you press on that, leave us a message, and we'll play that before the end of the show. Ted, I am very curious to find out what you think about this because we've been waiting for a while to find out what Robert Kraft has to say about all the shenanigans here in the offseason between Mike Vrabel and Diana Rossini. And today, the First Take show, Mr. Stephen A. Smith, who loves asses, he was had this big table, and he was at the, I think it's the Fanatics Fan Fest, where you basically go and you pay a lot of money and you get autographs from a ton of different people. Is that correct? I think that's what they do, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
well,
you know,
they must have like displays and talks. I think they have like big speaking engagements from certain athletes, whatnot.
Sure. Well, Robert Kraft was sitting down at the table with Mr. Stephen A. Smith and his female co-host. I forget who it is now. He was with Michael Rubin, who is the owner of Fanatics, and he's also the guy. Do you remember that great video where Michael Rubin and I think it was like Meek Mill bought this like Bentley, souped up Bentley for Robert Kraft, and he comes out and goes, "How the fudge did you get it?"
yeah, they bought him one, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, well, how'd you get it? Because the guy's like a billionaire. Billionaires get cars.
It takes a while to get that. You got to get that proper, what do you call it? When you want a car, you have to put in for it, and there's a certain allotment. What is the term of that?
Yes.
It's probably one of one, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure that Michael Rubin, a multi-billionaire, and Jay-Z apparently was one of it too, who's also a billionaire, would have a real hard time getting on that list for Robert Kraft. But nonetheless, Robert Kraft was sitting down, and after he, of course, plugged Fanatics, and you know, he loves this Michael Rubin guy. He really does.
Yeah,
Robert
they're best
Kraft,
friends,
Best buddies. And he was basically, you know, talking up the Fanatics Fest and doing all that. And I'll also say this, Robert Kraft looks good. Like, I don't know what's going on, if he's looks maxing and using peptides or something, but like, or the lighting was nice, but I saw it, I was like, you know what? Give the guy credit. He's an old dude. He looks good.
He looks
pretty good. And he was finally asked by Stephen A. Smith about what he thinks of everything that's been going on this offseason with Mike Vrabel. Let's take a listen.
Do you ever not like it? Having a nice hot grilled hot dog slice? You like it, right?
That's the wrong clip.
My bad.
Now, granted, it's the greatest thing he's ever said, but that is not the clip. Let's take a listen. He answering about Mike Vrabel.
Robert, I want to talk about the Patriots a little bit. Since we last saw the Patriots in the Super Bowl, there's been a little bit of a tumultuous offseason, we could call, for your head coach, Mike Vrabel. What's it been like navigating that during the offseason?
Well, we're privileged to have Mike as our head coach. You know, no one is infallible. And what's great about Mike is he has great intellectual knowledge about football, all the technical skills. He relates to players beautifully. And he's someone I have a strong belief and faith in, and I hope he's going to be our head coach for many years to come.
Woo! There we go. Man, that's a
sounded like Tatum talking about Jaylen
right
Brown.
There, man. Dang, yeah. If I'm Mike, I'm feeling pretty good about that endorsement.
And you know what, too, is that there was a follow-up, and Stephen A. Smith came in and said you hope he's the coach. You're the owner. You know, is he going to be the coach? And he goes, oh, you do? Oh, let's hear that.
Why do you say you hope as opposed to no? Because you are the owner. I mean, it's your team.
Sweetheart, right. I know.
Whoa, I like that.
That's what I'm saying.
By the way, I hope it. It's a great endorsement for a coach.
I'm just saying.
He's got all the right intentions. He's a hell of a coach.
We like everyone to have humility.
Right.
And when you say things like that, so just especially when you win and you win big, staying humble. Yeah. I'll tell you, he relates to the players in a unique way. I've been privileged to have my three former head coaches all won Super Bowls. So I've gotten to see what's necessary in a coach. And he was a great player with us. He won three Super Bowls. He has experience, and he really knows how to connect. So
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, are you surprised, though, Rich, that he went in that hard? I mean, So this is the first time we've heard him talk, right, since the Rossini stuff and give comment on what. So I'm not surprised. He basically wants everyone to forget what happened this offseason, right? But I think he sees some of himself. I mean, heck, he says no one's infallible. It takes one to know one. I mean, Robert Kraft's not perfect, but I think he wants to project this image that he's a good guy, and he is. I know Robert, he's a good guy, but he's not perfect. Neither is Mike. And the word is, Jonathan Kraft looked at this Rossini issue very differently than Papa Bear did, Robert Kraft, right? So I think if you were to ask Jonathan Kraft about what he truly thought about this incident, he would have a completely different opinion. But Robert, look, he's had his kind of embarrassing episodes with the media, and he's lived through them. So I think he kind of gives Mike the benefit of the doubt. And comes from it with a more empathic kind of a viewpoint than maybe his son does.
He's kind of the perfect coach for this situation, or a perfect owner, isn't he?
Absolutely.
Because if he says anything other than that, immediately you get a label of being a hypocrite. And so he, to say the things that he said was the right thing for him to say if he wants to continue any kind of positive movement to make this thing go away. Because all of a sudden, if you say anything that gives even a hint of you trying to take the moral high ground in this situation, here come the articles. Here comes the finger wagging. So he did the right thing to kind of kill the negative stories for a little bit.
Also, too, guys, they went to the Super Bowl. This team was two previous seasons. They won 8 games total. Like, they're back, baby. People are talking about the Patriots. They're relevant again. And Robert wants to hang on to that more than anything. So he is desperate for this Mike Vrabel, coaching experiment to work out.
And today, I don't know if it's, coincidence or not, but the Forged in Foxborough episode dropped, the second one, where they go behind the scenes. You know, it's their behind the bee sort of deal. And they had a lot of Vrabel featured in this. And he comes off, obviously, that's Kraft production, looking very good. And he looks like he's relaxed to me. I mean, you got a lot of candid video of him talking to the rookies, talking to the team, back on the field. He looked the same as he ever was. Mm-hmm. Now, whether that was carefully edited or not, I don't know, But he seemed like, Vrabel seemed like the same guy.
You know what? He's got a ton of confidence. And even in the face, I couldn't handle the situation probably like he does. I mean, he just kind of, he's able to let this stuff roll off his back and lock in and focus, and that's part of what makes Mike as good as he is. So he can compartmentalize, and he can, he can kind of let things, not impact, his decision-making and how he communicates with the team. So I thought maybe initially there was a little bit of hesitation and a little bit of kind of
up. You could hear it during the draft, obviously he left.
And then over time, the wall started coming down a little bit, and I think we're going to see Mike kind of back to where he was when he first got hired here last year.
I've been told, Ken, that this clip of him talking to the rookies is pretty good. Stiz, do you have that? Do you from the Forged in Foxborough episode?
Yeah, where he was talking about appreciating staff members.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let me hear that if you don't mind.
Great dinner tonight. Tell me somebody that helped serve your food. $100 meals help refresh your memory. I bet tomorrow we'll go in here and we'll introduce ourselves to the men and women in that cafeteria that are busting their ass to make sure that you guys got something to eat, Caleb. Say, hi, Jackie, I'm Caleb. It's nice to meet you. Or, hi, Terrain, I'm Caleb. It's nice to meet you. Okay, make sure we do that, fellas. That's important.
And he goes on for a while. There's a lot of clips of it, but...
Well, this is not Belichick Steve anymore.
Yeah.
That's the last thing he would address.
He wouldn't have done that to you?
Hell no, dude. Are you kidding me?
You just grimace at the lunch lady.
That's it, man. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Ken. You had a point.
No, there. I was just going to say, right after that, they go to the A.J. Brown stuff. And I do think just having Brown's presence, like his... Just having him come in here and like maybe being a distraction, but also just like, hey, we got to – oh, it's getting real now. We got a top 10 receiver.
Ken,
he took a lot of weight away.
In a way, AJ legitimizes kind of the whole thing. Like, it shows that they're serious about, you know, giving help to Drake May. It shows that you really want to weaponize the offense. It shows that you get what you have in the quarterback position, and you want to maximize that. So he just brings, I think, credibility and legitimizes the whole, at least operation on the offensive side, Rich. Yeah.
I also think, Ted, is that there is, with all the noise that's on the outside, don't you think that a guy like Vrabel finds coaching his team, like he always does, his happy place?
Bro.
Like being away from all of that. Like, he wants to be doing as much of what he used to do as possible because it keeps everything else outside.
Yeah.
And I just have a feeling that he doesn't need to dig deeper, but maybe, just maybe, that will give him a little bit of an extra incentive to maybe stay at the facility a little bit longer, maybe work, you know, a little bit harder, just because it keeps him from walking away from it all and just being left with all of the noise that's on the outside.
Well, he knows people are watching him eat closer now than they were before because of what happened.
It's kind of like in the Odyssey. The boat goes past this island with the sirens on it.
Yeah.
There are these hot babes, I think, that are over there on the island. And you want to stay away. You can't say it's a pivot when I'm pivoting to non-sport.
those ladies aren't hot. I've seen them. They were hotter in other movies. I don't like the hot ladies you have in this hot movie, in this fake book of things that didn't happen. You are not as hot as in the older ones. I'm boycotting this movie I haven't seen.
Hey, are you curious to get his movie review, Rich?
I bet your ass I am. Yeah. Hell yeah.
One of his songs.
I can't wait to hear that movie review. And real quick, another thing on Vrabes. You can hear him talk about this type of stuff, you know, introducing yourself to the lunch ladies to get to know them. But what about when he's talking about family and, you know, being with your family and how important family is? That's when, you know, that's when people are going to be like, okay, are you sure? You know, so that's as long as he stays in his lane, he'll be fine.
Yeah, right. It sounds like he's, you know, because maybe he's going to pick and choose a little bit more. Maybe that's definitely not the lane he's going to go down. I that's a great point, because the minute he does that, I mean – you can even it's like the eyes, the massive amount of eyes rolling to the back of their heads.
And I think that was a big part of what, you know, I think that was a big thing he coached on. So I think he's probably just going to, you know, not lean into that as much this time.
Yep, absolutely. All right, 617-779-7937. We've got a little bit more of that of Vrabel stuff. It's good. It's good. And I like the fact that it sounds like old Vrabel. Sounds like Vrabel's back. Yeah. It sounds like he's in a happy place. And it sounds like your Patriots are on the right track. But Stiz is going to spike the football a little bit, because there is some more information that has come out about what would have happened. This is from Shams, so it's good. So this is like well-sourced. What would have happened if the Celtics decided to keep Jaylen Brown around for another season? Apparently, this may have been a no-brainer for Brad Stevens. As much as Celtics fans don't want to hear it, it sounds like there would have been a little trouble in paradise if Jaylen Brown would have remained for one more season. We will get to that back in 2 minutes.
How the fudge did you get it?
It is 93.7 WEEI, and the number to contact us, 617-779-7937. Still a few minutes to launch Take Grenade. Go to the Odyssey app, press that microphone. We'll play them on the air. And the drive home is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire. Nobody. Well, I think you guys somewhat agree with me in that You know, I think that you could justify Jaylen Brown not being on this team for basketball reasons, and there's been a hell of a lot of articles, and we've had several of these people on. The guy from Yahoo Sports could be a lawyer. He put together such an amazing argument as to why this team is going to be better without Jaylen Brown that it even got me believing it for a moment. But the thing that you can absolutely get pissed off about if you're a Celtics fan is the same thing I'm pissed off about, is that you got absolute trash for a guy who was in the conversation for MVP. Now, is there anything that could have made it to where Brad Stevens' hands were tied? Things that could have been, like, Jaylen Brown didn't want to be here. He fired his way off the team. He said, you got to trade me. And there were certain teams that wouldn't take him, and then he ended up getting stuck with something bad. But from everything we've heard, that is not the case. He reportedly, still wanted to stay, never said that he didn't want to be here anymore. But this report is something that I know Stiz has been talking about for a while, and it's something that we thought could have been a factor, but maybe not. But now it seems to be confirmed. Shams Charania, one of the biggest insiders here for the NBA, had this to say about what the Celtics felt was the reason that they couldn't have kept him around, Jaylen Brown, for another season. Let's let it roll.
They knew they were not going to offer Jaylen Brown the two-year, $140 million plus. And that would have caused a reaction. Both sides would have had to have even harder conversations, and this could have gone another way. This could have gotten ugly potentially, because you've already shopped the player in Jaylen Brown multiple times.
What can I say? I know ball.
Yes, you do, this is great. I love this right here. I mean, I love all the JB people, all you lovers of JB. I believe Shams when he says that there would have been trouble if they didn't give him and you know what? Seriously, Jaylen Brown, you got 3 years left on your deal, and you're ticked off that they won't give you a two-year extension that is, you know, 5 years down the road that it's going to be paying you like $70 million a year? Come on, man.
Well, what was he going to do? You think he would have not shown up for work and turned down the $50 million he was making?
No, he would have showed up, but you know what, though, Ken? It just... Jaylen Brown's would have just brought this dark cloud because he basically is passive aggressive. He says he wants to stay here, but he acts like he doesn't.
Athletes all have egos. You got to deal with some egos.
But when it's one of your better players on a small team like that, it has a much bigger impact, a negative one. So I just think he was just a dark cloud that had to go, man.
Well, Twitch chats would have been brutal.
Oh, sure. I am calling BS at the highest degree on that. I absolutely think that the Celtics were embarrassed, but the response was almost unanimously, you guys suck at your jobs, you got nothing back for him, and you could have kept him another year. Mm. So if you were a good GM, which I thought for years Brad Stevens was, you could have been able to sit him down and said, hey, man, we're going to talk about this extension at another time. We want you here this year. Let's go out. Let's kick some ass. Let's get a big in here. Let's get Mitchell Robinson, and let's go have some fun. I have a feeling that a good GM would be able to keep him, Jaylen Brown, a guy who loved playing here, living here. This is his only team he's ever played for. You could have, for one more year, kept him in a good headspace because, and you can even say, it is rare that people get these extensions. We just made you one of the highest paid players in the entire NBA. We're not going to do it right now, but we are going to try to win another championship. Come on, Bucko, let's do this. And if you're Brad Stevens, that's your job. And I think that he could have absolutely done that, and it would have worked for another year, but they effed up. They screwed up, and they saw the fan reaction, and now they're trying to like cover their ass and say, you know what? He would have, you know what he would have done? He would have showed up, and he would have like thrown games.
I can't believe you're
saying
this. You really think you give him that much credit, Jaylen Brown? He would have been the good soldier, that he would have been totally fine not being offered an extension. You're out of your mind.
Ken said it best. What's he going to do?
He'd show up, but he'd be sucking his thumb as he come to work.
Toxic work environment.
It would be. It would be. Yeah, of course he would show up because he wants to get paid, but would he be a good teammate? Would he be supportive? Would he be, I don't know, pulling in the same direction as everybody else? Hell no.
And shove Deuce in a locker.
And people go, well, why did you have to do it now? Why did you have to do it now? Because they knew when they could give that extension, would have been at the end of this month, is what I think when the timing of it. And when they didn't give it to him by the end of July, he would have been just, he would not have been, I think, the Jaylen Brown that he was before. He would have been all pissed off, and he would wish that they would have traded his ass. So people wonder why they did it now. It's because of Jaylen Brown.
He would have done nothing to jeopardize his value.
Like, are you kidding me?
They would have nothing. You think he wanted to shoot himself in the
foot? He went on Twitch streams and killed his trade value by mouthing off to about this being his favorite season ever. He did himself no favors.
See, I think in his brain, he thought he was boosting his trade value by saying that. Look how good I was, and look how much I elevated my players. Yeah. I think that was him.
And how'd that turn out for him? How'd that turn out? Because there were so many people knocking down the door to get him.
No, it backfired, totally. But I think in his brain, he thought that was making him more valuable.
Yeah.
So, but I guarantee you, him showing up and jeopardizing games or starting fights, in no world would he have thought that was something that would have helped his value.
Well, can we at least agree on Shams Charania, cut number two? Stiz has this. It's
okay.
Again, back to the Giannis situation. One more time for Giannis. Here's what Shams said actually happened that made that deal fall apart.
Giannis wanted 35% of the cap on his next extension.
That's
that's just a false report. Okay.
Yeah, and I assume there's a lot of those going around right now with anonymous sources.
The breakdown with the Giannis Boston conversations was very simple. The Celtics did not want to give up Hugo Gonzalez and or Baylor Shireman and another draft asset when the Bucks asked for that.
It's unbelievable.
All right, that's not a good look.
Not a good look at all.
Can we all agree they should have given up Baylor Shireman or Hugo Gonzalez and just traded him for Giannis?
Maybe Baylor, not Hugo. Ugo's the line that I will not cross. That's the dumbest thing ever. Now that should make you pissed at the Celtics,
but you guys also, he's 19 years old, isn't he? I mean, the guy, what if he does turn into be? I mean, 19 years old.
He did look good in the summer league. His last outing, 24 points.
I don't know. Sometimes he's cheap labor. I could
he's
see
the Spanish
why
Jordan.
I don't know, man.
Spain's hot. Spain's going to win the World Cup.
I mean, it's Giannis, dude. And you got Paul George. You're going to be paying the money anyway that you're paying Jaylen Brown. You know, you got Paul George. You could have had Giannis. All you had to do was give up Hugo.
Hey, Rich, let me ask you this. Do you believe the idea that there were teams that the Celtics were negotiating with that had assets that the Celtics wanted, but then when they went to Jaylen Brown and said, "We're going to trade you this team," he was like, "No, I don't want."
Yeah.
So Jaylen Brown's partly responsible for the Celtics getting a bad return of assets.
There's no question. There's no question. And that was that whole thing with Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Bucks. The reason although Shams is contradicting that now,
correct,
that he would have made that deal anyway. But so
it all on Brad, I just think it's a little unfair. Jaylen Brown had a hand in the Celtics getting this crappy return too.
Well, Ted, you're sort of right. It would have been ugly, but you could have managed it. Rich is right in that sense.
Yeah, you could have. Yeah.
You could have tried, at least for half a year.
I mean, but you know what? There's a crack in it, and it just wasn't ever going to be better. Like, it's just these two guys that weren't going to cohabitate anymore. It's done. You basically know it. Why not pull the bandage off and get it done earlier, sooner rather than later, man?
I mean, listen, it's going to be an interesting season. I still believe that Tatum is going to, as long as he's healthy, is going to go next level. And he's already one of the greatest players in the NBA. I just believe that he's going to get almost the same kind of advancement in play that Jaylen Brown did. Because it's less ball to share. You're the guy now. You're the man. And there's pressures on you. That's the one thing I did agree with. I don't know who's a hot taker it was. But I think it was Kendrick Perkins. He's like, there's way more pressure on Jason Tatum than there is on Jaylen Brown this season.
Yep, I agree with that.
You got to show everyone that guy.
See how good you are. Ted says no.
Yeah, Jason Tatum, was he knocking down the door to get Jaylen Brown out of here?
Yes, I believe
he was. We don't know that. We don't know.
No.
Educated guess? What do you think?
Yeah, probably so.
I mean, listen, after that heartfelt Times New Roman Instagram post you put out there, how could you think anything different? All right, 617-779-7937. Your Red Sox are unbelievable, but there is still a player who is picking with members of the media. This is just wild. And it's a good day. It's a very good day to be a Boston Red Sox fan. But now, Ted, I agree with you. It almost seems like this player needs an enemy to perform well.
Mm-hmm.
We will get to that right after this. It is 93.7 WEEI, Rich Shirtleaf, Ken Laird, three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson, and we'll take your call 617-779-7937. What an amazing way to come back and start your second half of the season for your Boston Red Sox. Just an absolute ass-kicking to one of the best teams in baseball. 10-0, and on top of that, that is their 10th win in a row, and now Chad Tracy is starting to stack up a pretty good resume, showing us that why he should at least be considered at this point for being the permanent manager of this team.
37-31, pretty good record.
Not bad, especially considering how bad things were and the dumpster fire that he jumped into. I know that, like, they've been a Major League Baseball best 18-5 since June 19th. They've outscored opponents by 44 runs during this win streak. Lorenzo's got Narvaez and Caleb Durbin hitting, like, just hitting bombs onto 90. That Narvaez home run was unbelievable. Like, that was just, I mean, I didn't think it landed. But there is one player on this team who has these hot streaks and then cold streaks and hot streaks and cold streaks. But during all of it, he seems to be having an issue, not seems to, it's well documented, with fans. There's been times where he's flipped off fans, he's yelled at fans, and that is Jarren Duran. And Jarren Duran has been open about his mental health, but at the same time, you know, he's racking up quite a decent amount of incidents when it comes to this. And we talked to Chad Tracy about it, and just like a good manager, Chad Tracy defended him to the death. And I'm sure that if you're someone like Jarren Duran, you like hearing that from your manager. Doesn't mean, obviously, that's what he tells him in private. You know, he probably tells him not to pick any more fights with guys like Michael Holly anymore. But then you hear stories like this. So Tyler Milliken, he works with Jared Carabas over on the Section 10 podcast. And, you know, which is a good podcast, by the way. And
do you know him personally at all, Rich?
I do. Know Tyler. Yeah, Milliken seems like a good guy. And I mean, he is about as much of a baseball nerd as you can get. And he will admit it. Like, that is a stat. Like, just if you took the love of baseball of Dan Roach and then put it into a blogger, like a dude who's somebody who stays up until 3 a.m. and just types all night. That is Tyler Miller.
And adding Ken Laird's scoreboard notebooks to it.
Okay. Yes.
Really.
That would be it.
That kid is very thorough with his stats. Good, really good guy.
Sounds like a good dude.
And he's also not a guy that, like, comes across as, like, a dick. He seems like a pretty good dude, at least from what I know of him. And Tyler Milliken put this out there yesterday on the old social medias. He said, "I'd love to tell the Durbin story here. I don't care if it's public at this point. So, obviously, we did a pod with Durbin last June. We had a great time. Talked anime after, and he shared a bunch of cool stuff about the team and organization. Good time." He's a big anime guy. Did not know that. Mm-hmm. He said, "Well, when he flipped off that fan in Minnesota, I posted a picture on my Twitter of it. No caption, nothing else. I did it specifically because I know he's very sensitive about anything involving him, as the other guys have talked about. Well, when he saw it that night, he texted Jarrett that I was a fat F and that if he ever saw me, he'd beat the F out of me. When I had my first Fenway Friday, I walked up and asked him if he wanted to talk about it. He said I was the effing worst, and he got up and left. And that's the end of the story, even though I'm always down to talk. I didn't even comment on the situation in Minnesota, besides back him on the pod. He blames me as the one who blew it up."
That's wild.
Well, why share that now? What was the what forced Tyler to feel like he had to tell that right now?
You know what? It does look like it's, and I hate to say this, but it does sound like he's responding to something, but that, like, screenshot is the one that got, you know, passed around.
I think he did, like, an AMA, Rich.
Okay.
Like, they have a Patreon where fans can pay for, like, extra content. And I think
he did,
like,
what does that mean? AMA and a Patreon?
Ask me anything.
Ask me anything.
Does this Tyler Milliken story shed any light on what you thought of Jarren Duran? Does it change or highlight anything to you?
The only thing it highlights to me is that this is continuing, and it hasn't stopped. And although that was a little while back, so maybe he has gotten better.
What about
in
you,
fairness.
Ken? You got?
Well, I mean, it's not really that big. An athlete thinks a media guy is a fat F. I mean, that's pretty much every day.
I want to kill him.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of normal, right?
I think it shows, if you were questioning whether or not Jarren Duran did some of the stuff that he's being accused of, but you didn't hear him, or you're not really sure. Mm. Does this to me makes me feel like, it's hard to believe Jarren Duran's telling the truth when I hear a story like this.
I mean, it's another episode.
It's hard for me to give him the benefit of the doubt when I hear a story like this.
But when you played, how many media guys did you like? Or did, like, did you guys behind the scenes?
I wouldn't text a guy.
But and, now this guy, like,
yeah, how many did you call fat? Like, that's just mean.
Okay, like, but then, like, he
Jared Rand gets sensitive from people being mean to him.
Right, thank you, Jackson. So Tyler, these guys were friends or friendly enough at some point, and he broke that trust by like stabbing him in the back is what Jaron obviously feels here, right? I mean, they hung out for a little bit, and then this guy posts a picture of me throwing the middle finger up. I mean, I get why he's pissed.
But he did it. But Jaron Duran did it.
Okay,
then
fine,
don't flip a middle finger. Like, you're
nobody
at a,
would have you, seen it. If, like,
no. You play a sport in front of like 10,000s of people.
It was a national broadcast.
It was a national broadcast. You flipped people off. Yeah. But you're gonna blame one guy who also saw it and put it on the dude. You did it in front of a national audience.
And it's not like this is the only incident.
Okay, but this incident's not that big of a deal. I mean, he's had much worse incidents. This is like to me, this is not a huge deal.
But I think it explains kind of, I think, the psyche. I think it reveals more about Jaron Duran.
Sure. He's on edge.
More than maybe even I thought
mm-hmm.
after hearing this story. And I'm sorry, just real quick, you know, we didn't have relationships with reporters. Like,
okay,
Jaron Duran and Tyler Milliken being friends is kind of weird.
Okay,
to me.
So Jaron Duran's a nice guy. He's like going out of his way to try to be nice to this guy, and then what happens?
Help me out, Stiz.
Does the average fan care about this? I'm just trying to. If I'm a fan that cares about the Red Sox, I really don't mind that he called Tyler Milliken an F. You know, I don't.
Can I just say, I think for me, all this says is that we just know who he is now. Like, we know who he is. And, you know, and he's not going to change. There's been a lot of talk about how things are going to be different. We've talked to Chad Tracy. We talked to him when that whole thing where he went off on Michael Holly was. And I was just saying that, you know, at what point do you just tell him, come on, man, stay off of social media. It's not good for anybody.
But he
don't
is off
read the
social
comments.
Media, right?
But he's finding out. That's how he found out about the Milliken thing. It's so he's just we just have to accept that this is who he is. Now, is that a reason to kick him off the team? I don't think so.
It's a reason to trade him.
Well, he might be a pain in the ass, but for the teammates and for the manager. But to be quite honest, if I'm a manager and he's doing that, and he's still killing it, like if he's playing well, I don't know if I'm
but
bothered enough to get rid of him.
Yeah, three driven in today. That
you know
sack fly would have been a homer in 20 parks.
Okay, yeah. Give me, when's the last time he's had any real sustained success? It was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
This to me, this highlights the robustability, the unpredictability to Jaron Duran's personality that I just don't trust.
What if he sees Lorenzo? Would it change your mind?
Maybe. I mean, if there's anybody that can, you know, maybe change the fortunes for Jaron Duran, it's Lorenzo, right?
All right. Are we being hypocritical in looking at a guy like Jaron Duran doing this stuff and being like, well, he's like a really, you know, kind of being a piece of garbage, but then looking at Wilson Contreras and him being a guy who, you know, picks fights with people on Instagram and thinking that that's funny? You know what I mean? It's like, are we being a little hypocritical?
Yes. I think there is a double standard with that. We Contreras, people love his attitude.
Yeah.
And he hasn't, you know, done the things Jaron has. And Jaron apologized for the worst one of them, and we can admit that. Like, he knows he went too far a couple years ago. So just lately, what have we had with Duran? Nothing too serious.
He's picking more fights with the media. I don't know.
Contreras asked the guy to meet him at Fenway, and he'd fight him. And everybody's like, yeah, great.
That was funny. Like, that was, yeah, see, and I found that funny.
But why? And maybe, what's the difference? I mean,
maybe the difference is because he's not as prolific. Maybe that's why. Maybe it's because with Duran, you keep hearing it. It's like over and over and over again.
If he was hitting 350, this wouldn't even be brought up. You'd be like, Milliken,
you're probably
shut
right.
Up.
No, it would be brought up, but we'd just kind of be like, well, man, that makes him great, right? He's competitive. You know,
Tyler Milliken never would have reported it if he was
that's true.
Killing it.
That's probably true.
You know what I mean? But he's not playing well. The team's, you know, and he's down. That's the time to put that out there. So he wouldn't even have posted that if Jaron Duran was sitting the cover off the ball.
But Duran's back in the lineup tonight. He's playing both ends of the doubleheader today. He had a good game one. And you're right about that. I mean, if he raises his trade value, maybe he is a trade piece. Oh. But, hey, at least get him back into a better trade position, you know?
I hope he crushes the ball the next 16 games. I do. And they still trade
until August 3rd.
And then you want Roman in? Do you trust Roman to put him right back in there?
You know what? I trust Roman more than I trust Jaron Duran. I do.
Yeah.
One guy's in Fort Myers, one guy's here ready to go.
That's true.
He's suiting up tonight, suited and booted.
All right, 617-779-7937. We get back, not only will we sweep the leg, but we will get our own Ken Laird's review of the Odyssey. We will do that next. It is 93.7 WEEI. Rich Shurtleff, Kent Laird, Ted Johnson. Legitimately jealous of anyone going to Fenway tonight. I am. Yeah. The team's playing well. I mean, they just kicked the ass of the best team in the American League, and it's supposed to be a nice night. It's not going to be. I think that dangerous, smoky, like sepia-toned sky is now gone, which literally, like, I think, like, burned my lungs a little bit that first day.
No, I was feeling it, like, headache, like, slight headache all week. Just like
it's just like a different tint to our lives. It was weird.
Yeah, that absolutely sucked. All right, so real quick, we'll do an abbreviated version of this just because we have an abbreviated show. Let's launch a take grenade, shall we?
Incoming!
And these take grenades brought to you by Milligan & Higgins, OUI and criminal defense attorney. Go to MilliganandHiggins.com for a free consultation. You've been leaving messages during the show, this very short show. Let's just do one because I want to get to this Odyssey review. Let's go. Pull.
Dropping a dime piece on the head of the Rays? To start the second half? How about these Red Sox, baby?
It's true. It's true.
It is wild.
Ten in a row? I mean, the play of the game, though, was that bunt that was just rolling right down the third base line. Yeah. And you're like, oh, please stay in. And, of course, it was. Everything went their way. And Wilson Contreras coming back. And what's great is that, you know, so much for that suspension. They went 5-0 without him.
Yep, they don't need him.
Trade him. all right. So before we get to your review, Ken,
right.
You know, every time there's some sort of massive pop culture story, you know, all of these social media people try to latch onto it. And the Odyssey obviously came out yesterday and is basically sold out all weekend wherever you want to go see it. If you're going to go to the IMAX format, which it was filmed in, the Boston Celtics put out a tweet yesterday that left me scratching my head.
I did see this.
It was a picture. It was supposed to look like the poster for the Odyssey, you know, the one where it's got, you know, the back of Odysseus's helmet, except the face that is in the helmet was Jason Tatum. That was it. All right. Okay. And then underneath it, it says for the name of the movie, The Anomaly. Now, am I the only one who's never heard him ever called The Anomaly before?
I don't even get it. What does that mean?
Okay. I had to look this up. I had to look this up. And I'm like, huh? Is Jason Tatum called The Anomaly? And I've just never known this. And ChatGPT said, it came out of Twitter in January 2025. An ex-user suggested it, and it took off with Celtics fans over the following weeks.
It did?
No, it didn't.
What are we doing?
I have never heard this ever before in my life. The Anomaly. All right. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't the only one.
No,
just like,
it was baffling. I just choose to let that one go and not address it. But now that you bring it up, it was odd. It was very odd.
It was very, very strange.
The Celtics are in a weird place.
There's nothing worse than like someone trying to make a nickname work.
Oh, so true.
Like the Blues Man?
Well, I like the Blues Man. No, it was like when Dustin Pedroia like was trying to call himself La Luna or something for a minute. Do you remember that?
No.
Yeah, it was like Donner Soul was like La Luna, and you're like, huh? Mm-hmm. That doesn't work at all. Laser Show was a much better one for him.
Yeah,
because he used that phrase. People liked me to reference the phrase. It was great. All right. So how was the Odyssey, Ken? You went and saw it not in the IMAX, but you saw it in the regular format.
Regular theater, 6:15 last night.
Now, buckle up. Here you go.
Well, no, and should we? I'm not going to like spoil anything. But if anybody, I hate spoiling people's movie experience if they don't want it. So if you, I mean. Don't say
everyone's giving their
channel,
opinions.
Like,
a lot of people are giving their opinions. You're just one
I'll
of the many people giving their opinions.
I cannot wait for you guys to see it to compare notes because it was good. Okay, it is worth going to see, and I wanted to love it. You know how big of a Christopher Nolan fan I am, Rich, or maybe you don't know.
I actually don't.
I mean, I don't. None of his movies I think are perfect tens, but I think his like all of them are.
You know how huge of a fan I am. No, these movies aren't very good.
No, but I have like six of them that I think are nines. I love The Dark Knight, Inception, Memento was groundbreaking when it came out.
Yep.
Love Memento.
Yep.
Interstellar, Oppenheimer, The Prestige. I mean, they're all really good.
Yep.
I don't think this one bests any of those.
Ooh.
I haven't. I would give it a 7.5, which is good. It's worth seeing. It is a visual treat. It looks good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, first of all, it's 2 hours and 52 minutes, and I did feel it at the end. I think you got to go fresh into this. Don't go like late night tired. You got to be ready for it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's a lot of Matt Damon. He did a great job. Okay? It's
like, mean, he is Odysseus.
But it's like 80% Matt
Damon. You know, this Mission Impossible, it's a lot of Tom Cruise.
I know, but like, they have a great cast here. You would admit, like Tom Holland, Robert Pattinson, Zendaya's in it, John Barenthal's in it, but they're all just like a supporting, minor supporting roles. It's just you're
not enough balance.
You're hanging out with Matt Damon the whole show. He was good. I don't think great. Anne Hathaway was very good.
Mm. Love Anne.
Question for you guys, yeah. Just a philosophical question.
Sure.
In a movie like this, which is an epic, okay? And look, again, like, it's amazing. You're sitting there, you're transported to another place in time. Like, it's what he did here is impressive, no doubt about it. But do you have to have good fight scenes in an epic?
Yes. Okay. Are there not good fight scenes?
I mean, it's like even in the Dark Knight series, like his, remember when Bane, the fight,
oh, that was awful. That fight was bad. Yeah, but Bane went out like a puck.
I don't think Nolan is great at the fight scenes.
Okay.
So like Troy, you remember, did you ever watch Troy?
Troy with Brad Pitt.
There are some great fight scenes.
That one had the hot Helen of Troy. Yeah, that one had the good looking Helen of Troy. I don't like this communist one they did.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Say what you tell Rich what you told me about
Troy. I like Troy better than this movie. I'm just telling you. And I'm not trying to kill anybody's fun. Yeah. It's good. It's worth seeing. But maybe I built my expectations up too high.
You are by far the most negative review I've seen on this movie,
but I think it's good. Like, I'm not telling you it's
and
not
that's
good.
Still that's how negative it is. Like, people think this is the best movie they've ever
and
seen.
You know what, I have a feeling that Ken is probably what the truth is.
I agree.
I just didn't feel like you come out of a great 10 out of 10 movie. Look, when I saw Terminator 2 in the theater and I came out of there, I was like, oh my god, what a transformative movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This one was like, okay, it was impressive, but not a 10. Not a 10.
I feel the same way. I'm going to feel like I'm going to come out thinking the same thing Ken does. Because
but
I hope so.
I hope you guys
hyped.
Love it, and I would want to talk to you about why you thought that. You know, so it is worth seeing. Mm-hmm. This will be a good test for all of us in our movie appreciation.
Okay, listen, I'm not going to say anything one way or the other, whether you're right or wrong. I've not seen it. I'm not one of these people who's going to stand up and go, how dare you? Because everybody else thinks it's great.
Yeah.
I've got my ticket to see it on Sunday. I am not seeing it on the big screen. All I know is that I do wish there was less Matt Damon and more Jason Tatum as the anomaly.
Now, that might have made the difference. I probably would have given it a 10.
That the whole crowd, of course, knows that he's the anomaly.
Yeah.
And we would have rooted him for it. You know what? It's weird because I love that whole, like, genre. Like, I actually read a book about a year ago that came out called The Song of Achilles. You know, because it had Odysseus and stuff like that. And I'm like, well, it's a good book. And so I got a third through it. And I'm like, this is a gay porn book.
What?
Yeah. I was reading it. And I got a third through it. And I'm like, oh, I didn't realize the audience for this book. But Achilles, he's having a lot of gay sex in this.
Well, that's, you know, Alexander the Great, I think, you know, he had his fun too. Yeah.
Wow,
That's what you hear or read, you know.
It was a good book. I got to be honest. I mean, for a while, it was all into gay sex, but it shocked me. I do like this genre. Like, I love like the old school mythology stuff. Like, I like Clash of the Titans. I'm totally into it. So this is my wheelhouse.
Just a couple other notes. I love the middle of the movie more than the end. So I'm curious to hear what you guys think of the end. And I think Stiz will particularly love kind of a horror-esque scene or scene in the movie, which is to me the highlight of the film.
What about does Christopher Nolan, is his typical kind of the bed, the sound?
Yeah,
kind of, is that there?
Yes. It's an intense sound, like
which can get
it is
a little
an edgier
bit
seat.
Too much,
like the middle of it is really strong with that. It's got a good pacing in the middle. Yeah. So enjoy. I mean, I'm curious to hear.
I'll say this about Matt Damon. I don't see Matt Damon doesn't seem like the like an action hero. Like, you know, the Bourne.
Right.
All the Jason Bournes, where he was okay. I just don't see him as in that role where he's like the badass.
Right. You're right. I think he does a great job, but he's not Brad Pitt. He's not, you know, Christian Bale. I don't know. There are a couple actors, I think, maybe that might have been a better choice. Yeah, Tom Hardy. Yeah.
He's on the short list now, though. Like no one's on the short list. And he's been there for a while that I'll see anything they do. Like, there's a short list of directors that I don't care what the subject matter, who it is, I'm in. It's like him. Obviously, Quentin Tarantino is somebody like that. Mm-hmm. When the Coen brothers were making movies together.
David Fincher.
with David Fincher. Exactly. Like, there's a very, although now that I say it, there's probably about 10 directors I would say that about. Like, David Lynch, when he was alive, I would do that with him. I can't say it about Spielberg anymore because I didn't see Disclosure Day.
I haven't either.
And I heard it wasn't great. Stiz said it was, you know.
Rice pilaf.
Okay. Really? All right. Well, you know what? There you go. So you give it a seven and a half out of ten?
Seven and a half, which is still good and very much worth seeing. And, you know, it's well worth, you know, your time. What else are you going to do this weekend? I mean, you might as well go see The Odyssey.
Supposed to rain all weekend. Yeah.
I'd rather you be undersold and like it more than I say than to overblow it.
All right.
Agreed.
Well, just make sure you're not seeing it this evening. You are listening to WEEI. To hear your Red Sox once again absolutely pants the best team in the American League on their way to winning yet another World Series championship. What a weird-ass plot twist this season has given us. Woo! It's been fun. I'm jealous of everyone heading to the game right now. Beautiful night. You're not huffing in horribly toxic air. Wilson Contreras is back. The Anomaly is getting ready to play this season with a nickname that nobody gave him. Everybody have yourself a wonderful evening. Ted, Ken, Stiz, Jackson, we will see you all next week. We love you. Goodbye.